Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the Grill Room is definitely on our tab. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Welcome to the Grill Room Golf Show. It's heard on TuneIn Radio, powered by Golf Week. I'm Bob Bubka, here with Alex Maselli. Well, Alex, how was that red-eye flight back from the West Coast?
Long. They seem like they're getting longer, Bobby. Why is that? When you get older, everything seems to take longer.
Well, you know what's funny about that? Flights seem longer, but if you go away for a month, it seems to go by faster. I mean, I can remember getting out of high school when it was June and realizing I didn't have to come back until September. That seemed like it 2 or 3 years away. Now it seems like it's Memorial Day, July 4th, and then Labor Day.
Well, you know, and saying that, actually, I was looking, this week, I think we're a third of the way through the PGA Tour 2015 season right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing. But, you know, for a lot of people and a lot of golf fans, especially this year, I would think, because of the severe weather throughout most of the country and the insanely low temperatures that golfers had to put up with, everybody's kind of looking forward to April, the Masters. You know, that seems to be the general start of the golf season for the country.
Severe weather? What severe weather? Every place I've been has been fine.
Yeah, I know. Well, you go to good places, my friend. You go to good places. Oh, before we even get started, and the first event we're going to talk about, obviously, is the, Northern Trust Open out there. Was there any talk whatsoever, Alex? I mean, I know you were there. Had to be a little uncomfortable for Nick Faldo with Sergio Garcia in the lead on Sunday, especially after Nick Faldo's comments about Sergio Garcia when he was captain. Faldo was captain of that Ryder Cup team, saying that Sergio was, absolutely useless.
Well, there weren't any comments out there, but it was interesting on Sunday because sometime in the early part of the broadcast, I was inside the media center, and you would hear, Faldo talking about Garcia, and that was exactly what I thought about. I said, it's pretty hard for Nick to say anything good about him after he's pretty much railed on him after 2008, but I guess it's all water under the bridge. So, in the end, it was disappointing because then Sergio talks about the fact that he really didn't have any game, and he wasn't going to win anyways, and it would have been unfair if he did win. So, I mean, you hear those comments, and I kind of know where he's coming from, and then you hear what Nick had said before, and you're kind of like, well, were Nick's comments, did he have some credence back in 2008?
You know what's amazing to me, Alex, though? We've heard this from Sergio before, after the Masters, when he came close. He said, I don't have the game to win a major. I'm not good enough. It seems like Sergio gets some sort of enjoyment out of beating himself up.
Yeah, I felt that way. And, you can't go from talking to how you were Seve-like on Saturday to I had no game and I didn't deserve to win on Sunday. So I didn't understand that whole thing. I mean, look, as you know, a lot of guys win golf tournaments that don't think that they played well enough to win the golf tournament. And if Sergio would have won, fair or unfair, he still would have been the winner. And, it happens. How many times you hear guys talk about, it should have been a 72 and I made it a 68. I mean, that's the whole point. That's the game. You have to learn how to play and score even when you're not playing well. So I didn't understand any of that. Sergio's old enough to know that. But he just, you're right, he seems to get this delight in basically railing on himself after the fact. And the fact is, sometimes he's not railing on himself, he's railing on the media as well. And the problem is the media is only using what he gives them.
You know what's amazing, Alex? You said old enough. You know, Sergio Garcia is now 35 years old. I remember Medina, the, you know, PGA Championship, the, you know, shot from behind the tree, and he finishes second to Tiger Woods in that major, and he was 19 at the time, and everybody said, oh, well, he didn't get the job done here, but he'll have plenty of majors. Now he's 35 years old and still doesn't have one.
Right, and he's had opportunities, and he's not any different than someone else from Europe in Colin Montgomery. You get opportunities, but you're not like Tiger Woods. Not everybody has an opportunity like Tiger Woods or an Ernie Els or a Rory McIlroy. These opportunities don't happen that often for most players, and when they do, you have to take advantage of them. And if you don't take advantage of them, I think it becomes harder. And I think in Sergio's case, it does become harder when he gets himself in those positions. And so I don't know what he's going to do. He said on Sunday that he really hasn't had his game this year since Qatar. And so he's been searching for that. But then at the same time, he says it shouldn't be too far away. I should be able to find it pretty quickly. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. I don't know where you are. But when you've been playing for 2 months and your game isn't there, it just doesn't all of a sudden happen. And so I don't really understand where he's coming from, even though I thought he played some unbelievable shots on a very, very, very difficult golf course last week.
Yeah, and it's kind of amazing because over the years, you've heard it, I've heard it, somebody gets close in a major championship. And as I said about Sergio, you hear the comments, well, don't worry with that game. He's going to end up winning a ton of majors. That window of opportunity is so rare, and I don't think younger players fully respect the opportunity that's presented to them when they have a chance at winning a major, that they almost have to force themselves to do everything in their power to close the deal, because there's no guarantee you're going to get more opportunities.
No, there's not. And what's odd is look at the laundry list of players that have won one major and never have won two. I mean, it's not certainly not as long as all the players that haven't won a major, but it's certainly a very long laundry list as well. It is very difficult to win majors, and you have to take full advantage when you get those opportunities. And, you know, I would almost think if you're a Jordan Spieth or you're a Justin Thomas or you're a Brooks Koepka, they say, well, they didn't have the experience. I almost think it's easier to win your first major when you're in that situation because you don't understand. You're not, you in some cases, you're not as hyped up about it, as amped up about it. You're not treating it as big as we treat it, meaning in the media, as you grow older, you treat it because you know there's only four of them a year. So I think that's one of the huge benefits of a Rory McIlroy, a huge benefit of Ernie when he won it so young, a huge benefit of Tiger Woods. They won early, and that kind of takes a huge monkey off your back because then you understand and you treat them a little differently than we start treating them with these huge events. You start treating them like almost like they're just normal events.
I'm at a loss for words to describe the pain that I'm in right now because I agree with what Alex Maselli is saying, and it is so true. If you know, you start finding out that if you don't win this major and you don't win that major, it gets harder and harder and harder. I think it's much, much harder now for Sergio Garcia to win a major than when he finished second at the PGA Championship at a mere 19 years old.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. So.
Well, I know you hate agreeing with me, but that's okay.
Let's stop this falter off.
Hey, wait a minute. One more thing before we move on with the scheduled program. I'm in a little bit of a dilemma here. You know, I've worked with you on this Grow Room show, and I've listened to you, and I've played golf with you, and I've traveled with you. But, you know, we certainly have been at odds with, you know, the future of Tiger Woods. That's been well documented. And then I hear Jack Nicklaus say, oh, well, Tiger still has an excellent chance of breaking my record. which would mean five more majors. I mean, now what do I do? Do I believe in Alex Maselli, or do I believe in Jack Nicklaus with 18 major wins?
Well, I think you have to understand that Jack has he's got some skin in the game, and his skin in the game is that it doesn't benefit him one iota to say Tiger's not going to break his record. In fact, if Jack says Tiger's not going to break his record, it's going to be all over the front pages of every newspaper, every golf magazine. It'll be on ESPN. It'll be everywhere. So does Jack really want that? No. So it's easier for him to continue to say the party line, which is, I still believe he'll break my record. It's just easier.
Well, I think it was the prudent thing to say. Before we move on, certainly Scott Tolley, the director of communications for the Golden Bear, and Jack Nicklaus, he's been his right-hand man for a long time, looked pretty snappy getting out of that Donald Trump helicopter as they went down to Doral for the unveiling of the Jack Nicklaus Villa. I guess I assume that's where you're going to be staying in a couple of weeks.
Well, let me just ask you one question as you brought this up. All right, so you have been on Tiger's side. You have access to his people. They talk to you. Do you really, in your heart of hearts, believe that he's going to break Jack Nicklaus's record?
No, I don't think he's going to break Jack Nicklaus's record right now. I can't conjure up that feeling. But I still think he's going to win the Masters this April.
Wow. You know, I tell you, those guys in Vegas love you. They just love you.
They love me for a lot more reasons than me predicting Tiger Woods is going to win. I guarantee you that. They love me in Cachada, which is in Louisiana. They love me in Biloxi, which is in Mississippi. They love me in Atlantic City. I'm loved at a lot of places. I guarantee you that much.
Well, let's move on to Northern Trust, which we will come to when we return. You're listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn Radio and powered by GolfWeek.com. We'll be right back with Around the World of Golf, and we're starting with, of course, the Northern Trust Open.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. And because of their efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, a course that is more sustainable, and one that offers natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The Golden Bear agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Winter storms getting you down? Why not join us in Hawaii at the Aston Waikiki Sunset? This family-friendly condominium resort offers the best of both worlds. Hotel services and amenities, and all the comforts and conveniences of home just over a block from famous Waikiki Beach. Newly renovated spacious suites include fully equipped kitchens, separate living and bedroom areas, and a private lanai to relax while enjoying magnificent views of Diamond Head, the Pacific, or Honolulu's vibrant city lights. Visit AstonHotels.com or call 1-866-774-2924.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Help me out with this one, Alex. The 2015 West Coast Swing theoretically is finished, but we're going back to San Francisco for the match play, so I guess the West Coast Swing is not finished.
Well, and we're also going to the U.S. Open on the West Coast as well, Bob, so let's, you know. It's not a geographic thing per se. It's a timing thing. And the West Coast Swing is always in February, and it's done. And so we move on to the Florida Swing.
Boy, you had some great weather.
We go back to Florida for the Players Championship.
I was just saying, you had some great weather at Riviera. I guess it got a little dicey there on Sunday, but earlier in the week it seemed absolutely fantastic, and nothing prettier than Riviera in the sunshine.
No, I mean, I was out for 3 weeks in a row, and it started in San Diego and went to Pebble and went to L.A., and we had rain one half of one round in those 3 weeks.
Pretty amazing stuff, almost as amazing as the winner of the Northern Trust Open, Alex. James Hahn, 33 years old. What a story. Went to college nearby, I think, California at Berkeley.
Yeah, he went up in Northern California.
Yeah, and never made All-American, was down on his game. And I've read the story where, he went to, selling shoes and, and then said, well, let me give golf another try. These selling women's shoes is not the sweetest smelling job in the world. And played a year on the Korean tour and then on the web.com tour and now on the PGA tour. And now he's going to the Masters. An awfully nice young man, even though he's 33 years old and going to be a father within 3 weeks. What a day it was for James Hahn on Sunday.
Well, I have to apologize, and I feel a little embarrassed, but my knowledge level of James Hahn prior to Sunday, not prior to this week, but prior to Sunday, was limited at best. And it's amazing. It's a truly an example of how many good people there are on the PGA Tour that nobody knows of. Has no idea who they are, no idea what their story is. I mean, in James Hahn's case, when they were waiting for the last group to finish with Goosen and Sangmun Bae, and I can't remember who the third person was at this point, while they were waiting for them to finish, James Hahn was signing hats, and some person said, hey, there's a playoff, and do you know these guys? I think it's going to be Sergio Garcia and Dustin Johnson and, I don't know, some other guy.
Well, you put Sergio Garcia in the playoff. He didn't make it. Hey, there's going to be a playoff. Casey, Dustin Johnson, and some other guy. And that other guy happened to be James Hahn. But that is a little insight into, he was an unknown. There's no denying it. He was best known, a couple of years ago in the Phoenix Open at the 16th hole at par 3. He did that crazy dance that I've seen you do many times, Alex, as he left the green. That was what he was best known for. Now he's a PGA Tour winner.
Yeah, and it really, there's very few people that I think are more deserving of winning on the PGA Tour than James Hahn. It's tremendous. And, he was very, very excited about it, but yet he was very humble at the same time. If there's any rookies that have not experienced that scenario, they should record his press conference and play it back to everybody to understand how you deal with those situations.
Well, he came into the week 297th in the world after that victory. He is 86th after his win. And Hahn tells us he's still in awe of winning at Riviera.
Speechless. This is, I grew up in Northern California, and this is one of the biggest tournaments that, growing up as a kid, I'd watch on TV, would watch, Tiger Woods when he debuted as a pro. There's a lot of legends that came through here, and just being in the locker room and seeing all the murals and pictures of past legends, and to be able to think that one day I would be up on that same wall, to me, it's I'm speechless.
An amazing victory for an outstanding young man. Unfortunately, he's taking the next 4 weeks off for the birth of his first child. So I shouldn't say unfortunately. It's just normally when you're playing well and you're playing well enough to win, you're really anxious to tee it up again.
Well, let's make sure everybody understands as well. This was something that was scheduled no matter what had happened in Los Angeles. He was always taking 4 weeks off. So it wasn't like he won and he said, oh, well, I can take time off now. This was always part of the scheduled plan.
All right, some great play by some oldie but goodies, Alex. Retief Goosen, Vijay Singh, Paul Casey, Dustin Johnson. They all seem to be somewhat on that comeback trail.
Well, I think the one that's the most interesting, or the two that are most interesting, are the Retief Goosen and the Vijay Singh. People may remember back in the day when they were part of the what we call, I think we would have called the Big Five, including Vijay and Goosen, and there was also Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods. And in the mid-2000s, it seemed like those were the guys. That was it. The rest of the tour just kind of showed up for, like, fifth. And that's changed. Goosen, with his injuries, back injuries, which really have forced him, almost forced him out of the game, but now is starting to come back. Vijay Singh, who was 52 on Sunday, just, you know, at some point, you just, you know, age is going to catch up with you on the PGA Tour. Those two, I think, were quite interesting. Retief, because he feels like he can start playing again. And Vijay, because he really believes that he can still win on the PGA Tour. I think it'd be hard, very hard for Vijay to win on the PGA Tour. I think he had an excellent opportunity on Sunday and kind of let it go awry.
Well, you know, between Retief and Vijay, five majors between them. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Also impressive, Alex, the player Paul Casey, a very talented player, but really has had an unfortunate number of injuries over his career.
Yeah, and I think maybe his private life had not been as good as he'd want it to be either. Now he's got a very nice wife, and he's got a baby, and he really is settled in his private life as well as his golf life. And I think that's similar to Sergio Garcia in a lot of ways. Sergio had different issues off the course that I think really held him back, and now he's much more comfortable. He's getting married at some time this year. So I think all those things are a positive for him and a positive for Paul Casey. And his game is really good. I think David Clark is on his bag, Clarkey, who Paul is known for, I mean, back in the junior days, they used to play against each other. And Paul really wanted him on the bag, but he was in the Adam Scott sweepstakes. And so Clarkey had the decline when Paul wanted him late last year. And then when he didn't get the bag with Adam Scott, it was a perfect fit for Paul. And I think if you look at Paul's record so far this year, it's been pretty good.
Well, speaking of pretty good, when we take a look at the winners out west, pretty impressive list, Alex. Patrick Reed, Jimmy Walker, Bill Haas, Jason Day, Brant Snedeker, and two first-time winners, Koepka and Hahn now. That's a nice roll call.
Well, first of all, no Mickelson, no Woods. Interesting. Actually, most of these guys, you wouldn't necessarily, with the exception, I guess it's kind of hard to say that now. You take a look at Reed, and there's no question that when he tees it up now, he can win at any event, and I think the same thing for Jimmy Walker. I think, but what was interesting is after they both won, they really didn't play well afterwards. I didn't think Walker had a very good stretch after his win, I think Reed pretty much didn't do very well either. So that's kind of interesting. We'll see what happens in Florida with both of them. Bill Haas played, I thought, pretty well this year, and then I think he shot seven over at Riviera, and I don't know if that's a combination of his wife is expecting any day now, and I don't know if he was focused on that and kind of lost all interest in playing at Riviera or not, but Bill is one of those guys that I think is going to do anything possible to make the President's Cup team, and I think you're going to see his name a lot more this year. Jason Day, there's no question that he is a force, and I thought the way he pretty much dismantled the field and the golf course at Torrey Pines proved that. And Brant Snedeker is clearly back on the winning trail. He didn't have a very good Northern Trust, but he was sick the whole week, and that took a lot out of him, and he still made the cut, though. But I think the one that you're going to be most surprised about is going to be Brooks Koepka. I mean, this is going to be a guy that I think is on a rocket ship straight up, and it would not surprise me if he doesn't win another one or two events this year, and it certainly wouldn't surprise me to see him on both a President's Cup and Ryder Cup in the next 2 years.
Well, he's long off the tee and good on the greens. Before we move on to the LPGA Tour, Alex, your thoughts on the 10th hole. More talk about that short par 4 than probably any hole on the PGA Tour.
Well, you know, last year the 10th hole, I think, was the 21st hardest 10th hole on the PGA Tour. Now, there are some 10th holes that are par 3s and some are par 4, but majority of them are par 4s. So it was a hard hole, but not anything crazy. This year, it played even harder, and I'm not sure if if they've lost the interest in bringing it back to where it was, or if they, I don't know what they're trying to do, but I think it's gotten to a point where the golf hole probably isn't the hole that was designed by George Thomas, and or at least the intent of what George Thomas had. And I think they're going to have to think about probably flattening out that green a little, which seems to be the constant comment by most players. That, you know, people look at me and they say, why don't you lay up? Because when you hit driver or you hit three wood, you have these awkward second shots. And they're like, because believe it or not, if I lay up, I'm looking at a staring five right in the face. So it doesn't really matter what you do there. There's no right thing unless you can hit the green and can hold the ball on the green. So I think most players will say the green is just sloped too heavily. It needs to be flattened out like it used to be. Then it makes the 10th hole a fairer hole, and that is something I think Riviera is going to have to take a look at.
Well, when it was dry and fast this year, it was treacherous on hole number 10. Speaking of treacherous, I would say she's treacherous to the rest of the LPGA Tour, and that's Lydia Ko, validated her number one ranking with a win at the ISPS and Australian Women's Open at Royal Melbourne. Let me try that again. The ISPS Handa Australian Women's Open at Royal Melbourne, one of the great golf courses in the world. That's her sixth LPGA Tour win, and she's only 17 years old, Alex.
You know, I talked to Mike Fluff Cowan about Lydia on Sunday after he was done with caddying for Jim Furyk.
That could be her his granddaughter.
Well, he caddied for Lydia in the Women's Open this year at Pinehurst. And I just wanted to kind of get his feelings on her. And I said, you know, she won again. And he was surprised. And I just said, you know, I wanted you to tell me what you saw in her. And, you know, he says she's the total package, which obviously you kind of outlined here by winning six times already at 17 years old. But he said she thought very well. And I think that's an important thing. You can hit the ball a long way. You can do a lot of things on a golf course. But you have to think your way around some of these places. And you take a look at Royal Melbourne, which is surely a thinking person's golf course. You have to think your way around that golf course to win on that golf course. And she clearly did that. So there's nothing left for her except for her to continue to win golf tournaments and then to start piling up major championships. But I saw also that her desire is to finish playing golf when she's 30. And you know what? The way she's going, she might quit even sooner, because there's no one out there that has the chops to beat her when she's number one on her game. There's no one out there that can beat her. And I think that has to be a concern for the rest of the LPGA when they go up against her on a weekly basis.
Well, she may retire as young as 21 with records that nobody will ever match. I'll tell you what, though. Let's give a listen to the young 17-year-old as she describes the start to the season.
It's cool that I'm actually on the LPGA as a tour member, as a 17-year-old, and just to be one of the youngest, you know, tour members is just another special thing. But to, you know, be able to win here is amazing, and I mean, it's been so much fun, you know, playing here, and it's pretty awesome. I mean, this is definitely, you know, a great start to my season.
Lydia Ko, just happy with that great start, and Fluff Cowan giving her a great compliment by telling you that she thinks well, and I think thinking well includes a lot of patience, and she talks about that as the key to her win.
You got to hit good shots, but I think at the end of the day, patience was the one that you needed to have. You know, here there are so many putts that can be so close but then end up being a couple feet by, and you know, just you kind of look back and I go, oh, how did I make that bogey? But it's kind of easy to do. It's hard to make birdies, but so easy to make bogeys or worse. So, you know, I think just patience. That's what I tried to have. And, you know, I was talking to David yesterday and he said, Lydia, you just got to have that patience and just wait for, you know, the birdies to come.
You know, yesterday on Sunday at Northern Trust, Retief Goosen went through a stretch where he went double and he went bogey and he went from being 9 under to 6 under He's standing on the ninth tee, 6 under par, thinking he pretty much had blown the golf tournament. 6 under par was a playoff. And Retief Goosen didn't think that at the time. And I know talking to him afterwards, he realized he had many opportunities left to get himself in position to at least, if not win the golf tournament, to get into a playoff. And he wasn't patient coming down the stretch the last 10 holes. And it happens to everybody. But the bottom line is when you're playing a difficult golf course like Lydia Ko was playing last week, or like the men were playing at Riviera, you have to realize that you're not the only one that is experiencing problems around there. It's not like everybody's lighting the place up and you're not the only one. And I think those are things that when you can learn those and understand those experiences are huge. And I even take that further back. There's a lot of guys back in the day when they'd stop playing golf at 40 because they do television. Lee Trevino, I remember, was a great example of this. And he would be on the television broadcast, and he would watch what was going on because, you know, when you're playing else really, and you're certainly not watching what's going on around you, and you don't know what's happening four holes ahead. And he would watch all this, and he'd realize, you know what? These guys were having, they all have the same problems. And it actually makes you better when you realize that. And I think when you're 17 years old and you can understand that you have to be patient and that you actually are patient, you can talk about being patient, but when you actually are patient, it's lights out.
Pretty amazing stuff for that young talent and an awfully sweet young girl. What happened on the European tour, Alex?
Well, I cannot say the person's name. Can you help me with this, Bobby?
Lahiri,
I think it's
Lahiri,
correct? Lahiri,
yeah, I got it.
All right, so what I don't understand about this is a month ago, neither you nor I knew Lahiri from a hole in the ground. We just didn't know who he was, didn't know much about him. Then he wins a golf tournament in Malaysia. Okay, so he wins a golf tournament. There's a lot of guys that win singular golf tournaments, you know, around the globe, and you don't know much about him afterwards. Then he turns around and comes from behind and beats SSP in India to win the Hero Indian Open. Now this guy is 34th in the world. He's won twice in 3 weeks, and he's going to the Masters. He's going to Doral for the WGC Cadillac Championship, and you're like, who is this guy?
Well, it's certainly a fairy tale story, and when you look back at his childhood, apparently, and I find this to be a strange statistic, but 70% of the golf courses in India are owned by the Indian Army. His father was in the Army, so he got to play all these golf courses, and boy, he's sure taking full advantage of it right now.
Well, you know, I remember talking to Daniel Chopra. There are very few golf courses in India that are public, and I think there's only like one or two driving ranges in the entire country that are public. So unless you have access, you're right, you're just not going to be able to play. But the question is now, 34th in the world, Lahiri is, where could he go? I mean, how much better can he get? I guess we're going to get a much better feeling for that after he plays at Doral, and then 3 weeks later when he plays, let's see, 1, 2, 3 at all, a month later when he plays at the Masters. But, I mean, could we be talking about Lahiri winning a Masters? I don't know. I don't know anything about him. I know he's won twice, but I don't know how he would stand up against, you know, other fields, and I guess we're going to learn that.
Yeah, the unknown is lurking, let's put it that way. If you got enough talent to win twice in 3 weeks, you know, of course, the Masters, completely different story, but we'll keep an eye on it. Let's hear what he had to say about his second win in 3 weeks.
It's incredible. You know, I really didn't think that I had a fighting chance when I came out today. But I think this is probably the toughest I've ever played Delhi Golf Club. We've played here a lot. I guess it played to my favor today because it was so hard out there. And, you know, I still can't believe it. You know, two wins in 3 weeks, it's a bit surreal right now.
Well, that was Around the World of Golf, European Tour, the LPGA Tour, and, of course, the PGA Tour at Northern Trust Open. We're going to come all the way back to the U.S. in news and notes, Ryder Cup news. You're listening to The Grow Room, heard on TuneIn Radio and powered by Golf Week.
The Grill Room. Are you tired of the cold, wet, snowy, windy weather?
If the answer is yes, and a trip to the beautiful Hawaiian Islands is in your plans, you'll love the home-away-from-home ambiance of the Aston Ka'anapali Shores Resort. This is a one-of-a-kind property that blends everything a hotel has to offer with the casual lifestyle of a vacation condominium right on the beautiful Ka'anapali Beach. Guests can relax in hotel rooms, studios, one- and two-bedroom suites, all within the 10 acres of beautifully landscaped lush gardens and waterfalls. The Aston Ka'anapali Shores Resort offers an experience like no other. Ocean recreation, snorkeling and swimming, whale watching, the year-round Camp Ka'anapali Kids Club, a day spa, a beachfront restaurant, and even free scuba lessons. Make your reservations today. Call 888-671-5305 or visit them online at AstonKa'anapaliShoresResort.com. That's AstonKa'anapaliShoresResort.com.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game, and because of their efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, a course that is more sustainable, and one that offers natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The Golden Bear agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Alex, it feels like yesterday we were at Glen Eagles. And now the captains have been announced for the 2016 Ryder Cup coming up in Minnesota. Darren Clarke was announced last week. This week, the announcement of Davis Love III. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, let's listen to what Darren Clarke had to say. He was honored to be named Ryder Cup captain.
Huge honor. Huge privilege to follow in the steps of so many great European captains, and just hope we can do as good a job as they have all done in the past, you know, especially of late. Europe have been performing unbelievably well, and I hope the team that goes to Hazeltine can do exactly the same again.
Good choice by the European Tour, as far as I'm concerned, Alex. Darren Clarke certainly deserves the role as captain, and I think he's going to make a great captain.
Well, I don't think there's any question that he'll make a great captain. He has a lot of experience playing Ryder Cup, experience as an assistant captain or a vice captain. But the pressure of being the European captain, I think, probably is more now than the pressure of being the American captain, because where the American captain, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that we've had all these losses, and the assumption is that we're going to lose again. The problem is, that means if we're going to lose again, it means that the Europeans are going to win again. Do you want to be the captain that doesn't win? And I think it's going to be very, very hard to be that captain. It's going to happen one day. Talking to Padraig Harrington, talking to Paul McGinley last week, it's going to happen. And I know Darren Clarke will do everything in his power to make sure he is not the one. But he is coming to a hostile environment, which is the United States. He's going to be going against who I think a very good captain in Davis Love III. And I think some of the dead weight, and I use the term, I think pointedly, some of the dead weight we've had on Ryder Cups in the past will probably not be there. And we will have a much fresher and a much younger team. And I think that all of that is going to be a positive for the U.S. and much harder for Darren Clarke.
Well, of course, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Davis Love, too, Alex. You lose the Ryder Cup once as captain, you can almost take that. You lose it twice, and then it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth for the rest of your life.
Well, I can say that Davis Love still has a bitter taste in his mouth from what happened in Wales when he was with Corey Pavin. And he was only a vice captain there. And he said that to me the other day. And when we talked about being a captain weeks ago, actually, you know, he knows exactly what he did wrong. He knows exactly what he needed to do to right the ship if he had Medina to do all over again. But it's not going to be Medina to do all over again. It's going to be Hazeltine, and it's going to be a fresh look. But, you know, you can only learn from past experiences and mistakes. And I think Davis Love will do both of those going into Hazeltine.
Well, I hope we're not going to hear 2 years of this is going to be redemption, redemption. We heard that going into Glen Eagles. It didn't work. Let's move on. Let's pick another theme. I don't know how you feel about it, Alex. I'm just telling you how I feel.
Well, I think let's listen to Davis Love first talk about being Ryder Cup captain, and I'll tell you how I feel.
It's an honor to be here not only as a member of the PGA of America, but also the U.S. Ryder Cup family. I'm here today with the same goal I had in 2012, but not as the same captain. The Ryder Cup Task Force has been an open, honest, team-building experience. The collaborative effort of so many veterans of the Ryder Cup is a result of the passion and commitment to build a team structure that will lay the groundwork for future teams. It's a new business model, a new team-building model that comes from being given an opportunity by the PGA of America to come together and use all our veteran experience to build a new team culture and a consistent plan for the future. Why the shift now and not after 2010 or 2012? Simply, we want to win. What we created is a new process for continuity and teamwork, which will prepare us for many years of success. So 2016 will be a collaborative effort of many individuals from the task force, past Ryder Cup captains, veteran players of the Ryder Cup, to create the best environment for our team to be totally prepared to compete at Hazeltine National. And speaking of past Ryder Cup captains, I have spoken to many of them, and I can't tell you how happy they are to hear how involved, how happy I was to hear how involved they want to be. Whether it's directly or indirectly, they will be a big part of our team's success. I was honored to be asked to serve on the task force. I believe the PGA knows and understands my love and passion for the Ryder Cup. I could not be more excited to captain the 2016 team. But I agreed to do it for one reason. The members of the task force, to a man, have said they will do whatever it takes for this team to be successful. They are all in. Our team will trust each other, and we will have a shared vision. With that, to move forward with this new plan, I will need people around me that have a tremendous amount of experience, people who I will lean on to help me make good decisions in order to put our team in position for success, people who are leaders in their own right and have the respect of the players, people with a strong will and a servant heart. And finally, I look forward to competing against my good friend Darren Clark. We've always had great respect for each other. I know he'll bring a strong team to Hazeltine.
You know, Bob, here's the thing. I don't think the redemption argument that Tom Watson was espousing to the players made much sense to them about Medina. And I don't believe that Davis Love will be the one saying to his players, you know, you have to win this for what happened to me 4 years ago. I don't believe that either. I think Davis Love has learned that he needs to work with his team and get them in the right frame of mind, and that frame of mind is not, we lost last time, we've lost the time before, you need to redeem, I need redemption. I don't think that's the frame of mind he wants to see his team coming into the 2016 Ryder Cup at Hazeltine.
Well, it's sure going to be an interesting couple of years as we get ready to go to Minnesota for that 2016 Ryder Cup.
You're listening to The Grow Room. Heard on TuneIn and powered by GolfLoop.com. We'll be right back with what's next on the schedule when we return.
The Grill Room.
Are you tired of the cold, wet, snowy, windy weather? If the answer is yes, and a trip to the beautiful Hawaiian Islands is in your plans, you'll love the home-away-from-home ambiance of the Aston Ka'anapali Shores Resort. This is a one-of-a-kind property that blends everything a hotel has to offer with the casual lifestyle of a vacation condominium right on the beautiful Ka'anapali Beach. Guests can relax in hotel rooms, studios, one- and two-bedroom suites, all within the 10 acres of beautifully landscaped lush gardens and waterfalls. The Aston Ka'anapali Shores Resort offers an experience like no other. Ocean recreation, snorkeling and swimming, whale watching, the year-round Camp Ka'anapali Kids Club, a day spa, a beachfront restaurant, and even free scuba lessons. Make your reservations today. Call 888-671-5305 or visit them online at AstonKa'anapaliShoresResort.com. That's AstonKa'anapaliShoresResort.com.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. And because of their efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, a course that is more sustainable, and one that offers natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The Golden Bear agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
As Alex promised you, time now for what's next on the schedule for the Grill Room. It's going to be a busy week. While Alex makes his way down to the Honda Classic in Palm Beach Gardens, I'm going to take a trip to the Golf Course Superintendent Show in San Antonio, where over 13,000 golf course superintendents and industry leaders will be in attendance for their annual meeting, workshops, and a trade show. You know, golf course architects, Alex, get a lot of credit. Golf course club pros at their club get a lot of credit. I don't think the superintendents at golf courses get the credit they deserve. These magnificent pieces of property are left in their hands, and in order to enjoy a golf course to its fullest extent, you need a great superintendent to make sure that conditions are ideal.
You do, and I think what's unfortunate is that it's easy to walk into a golf course and see it be exactly the way you want it to be and just to assume that's how it is. And then you walk onto a golf course and see that it's not exactly how you want it to be, and then you want to blame the superintendent. And in both cases, they do have some investment in that, the superintendent does. But at the same time, they're dealing with so many different issues. I mean, the president of the United States doesn't deal with as many issues being president as a superintendent does on a golf course. I mean, from weather, from animals, from bugs, from insects, from disease. There's so many things that they have to deal with. And then, of course, there's us, the golfer, who some are very responsible and some are not. So there's so many different things that they have very little control over, at least at the beginning, that they have to deal with to make the golf courses, not only to keep it as good as it is, but to maintain that design that architect put into place. Just as a quick example, if you take Pebble Beach, where they're charging $400 plus a round, you can never take that golf course out of play. You can't take holes at Pebble Beach out of play. And yet you have very small greens, and you have to maintain them and make them as special as possible because people are paying $400 a round. I mean, that job alone is enough to make you pull out your hair. So it just gives you an example of how difficult it can be, especially at private clubs where you have members that, you know, they have a greens committee and they're always looking over your shoulder and making sure you're doing what you want them to do and so forth and so on. It's not an easy job. And they do a very, very good job at it. And so I think it's if you ever want to go get a real feel for a golf course, you don't go to the pro You don't go to the architect. You go talk to the superintendent.
And we're going to be talking to plenty of them next week, and we're really excited to be at that show. And, of course, one thing I can tell you in advance, Dan Jenkins is being given the old Tom Morris Award, and certainly Dan very deserving. When you look at some of the other winners, Alex, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Crenshaw, Ken Venturi, Nancy Lopez, and Annika Sorenstam, adding Dan Jenkins to that list, very fitting that he should be getting the old Tom Morris Award.
Well, the one thing I will say is journalists are a lot of times overlooked in the game of golf. We know certain names that pop up, but generally are overlooked both in the Hall of Fame and other places. So the fact that Dan Jenkins, who has been covering golf for eons and covered it well, not just covering it, has done such a great job. It's a testament to the organization that they have given him the old Tom Morris Award.
What else is next on the schedule? European Tour down to South Africa, Joburg Open, George Coetzee, defending champion. He is from there, so he'll be playing on home soil. Darren Clark going to be in the field. Should be a pretty good event.
And, you know, what's important here is because there's no match play, this field is a little stronger than it normally would be. So I think it's going to be good for him. And it'll be interesting to see what Darren Clark does in his first week now after being named Ryder Cup captain.
What about the LPGA Tour, Alex?
Bobby, it's the Honda LPGA Thailand event, and the Siam Country Club. Anna Norquist is the defending champion. No Lydia Ko. She's going back to New Zealand for a little while for a little break, which you can understand. But, again, the LPGA is very good at most of their players showing up to their event, so it's going to be a I'm sure it'll be a hotly contested event. And you know what I like about the fact when the girls are in Asia is we get to watch them playing in the morning or late at night, and then we get to watch the PGA Tour in the afternoon. So you got live golf going on 24/7.
All right, Maestro, give me a little music.
Racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will come.
As we head to the first tee, it's the start of the season down in Florida. At least it feels like that. Just as the Northern Trust Open ended the West Coast swing, Honda Classic kicks off the Florida swing and the run to the Masters. And credit certainly due to the great people that run the Honda Classic, Ken Kennelly and his crew, Gary Furman in the media center. The Honda Classic was voted PGA Tour's most fan-friendly event in 2014. In 2014, they had 193,052 confirmed spectators. Going to be a lot down there this coming week as Rory McIlroy, the number one player in the world, will be teeing it up for the first time on U.S. soil this year.
Yeah, he's a 7-2 favorite out of Vegas, Bob. So I think there's no question that at least Las Vegas thinks that he's going to be the winner. But, you know, that tournament seems to have that weirdness about it that, you know, it's a very hard golf course. There's so much water everywhere, hazards, problems, wind, the whole nine yards, that you get guys that you're not thinking. Last year was Russell Henley. We've seen Mark Wilson win down there. It's always interesting to see who wins that golf tournament. But we're going to see Phil Mickelson down there, which is the second year in a row he's doing this. I think partly that is now because of the fact that he didn't get to play as much on the West Coast as he wanted to, and he wants to play going into Doral in the Cadillac Championship. So, but the field is littered with very good players, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Martin Keimer, Ricky Fowler. Hideki Matsuyama withdrew, so he's not coming. I'm not sure why, and we'll hopefully know later on why he withdrew. Patrick Reed, Victor Dubuisson, Billy Horschel, our FedEx Cup champion, and then Brooks Koepka, Graham McDowell, Dustin Johnson, Zach Johnson, and Jamie Donaldson. Pretty good field, probably the best we've seen in a while. It'll be interesting to see what happens. There'll be a lot of discussion going on of Darren Clark, Davis Love, Rory McIlroy showing up, no Tiger Woods, going into Doral, and then, of course, we'll be talking all the time when we're in Florida about the Masters.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting run right now, and it'll kick off down at that Honda Classic.
You know, Bobby, just one last thing. So, no Tiger Woods. We really haven't talked. We talked a little at the beginning of the show. Tiger, I think, is now 70th in the world. his lowest ranking pretty much since he started playing golf as a professional. I guess the question to you is do you have anything in your crystal ball, or is his camp talking to you about anything? Because everyone is now wondering when Tiger is going to return. Some people say Bay Hill. Some people say the Masters. I think it's going to be even later than that. Any thoughts?
Yeah, well, my people are talking to his people, and the consensus is that he'll tee it up at Bay Hill and then go over to Augusta and finally get that 15th major.
Well, as you know, Bobby, you can't win it unless you tee it up. And if he doesn't tee it up, I guess he's not going to be winning that 15th major at Augusta National. Well, that wraps up this week. You're listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn and powered by GolfWeek.com. By the way, you can also hear The Grill Room on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, and, of course, on our website, TheGrillRoom.com.
A big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, and to GolfWeek.com. So for Janice Self, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bupka, thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.